You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, world, and welcome to Tales from Hollywoodland, a veritable feast of movies, Broadway, showbiz stories, news and gossip with Julian Schlossberg, Arthur E. Friedman, and Stephen J. Rubin. Today, we get to talk to the deli man himself, Ziggy Gruber. And now, here's Julian, Arthur, and Steve.
Ziggy, hello. You're in Houston, right?
Yes, I am in Houston. Believe it or not.
Hello, Houston. You know, I told the guys this morning that I'm in trouble because I haven't eaten yet today. And now we're going to be talking about delis and deli food and your experiences, and I'm going to try to hold it together here. I have to tell you, and I don't know what the other guys' feeling is, but my wife does not like delis. I could eat in a deli every day. In fact, my comedy writing partner, I write comedy, we work in a deli. We work in Factors, which I know you know.
Sure. I'm very good friends with the Markowitz family. They're great people. So let me ask you, is your wife a shiksa or what?
No, my wife is a wonderful Jewess, and she just is a little bit more less taken. She's I get her once in a while, but we're going through a bad period in Los Angeles right now. We, especially in West Los Angeles, because the Nate and Al's, which used to be the centerpiece, they've fallen on a little bit of hard times, to say the least. And we need a new deli, so we're going to make a big push to get you out here again.
Ziggy, I want to just say on behalf of all the guys, because I have been there and they have not, that your deli, Kenny and Ziggy's New York deli in Houston, Texas, is to delis what the Yankee Stadium is or what Madison Square Garden is. It is the greatest deli in the world. In the world. I've been there, and I'm telling you, everything is absolutely great. But what makes it is Ziggy, because Ziggy is familial. Ziggy's a human hug. Every time it's hugging. It's one of those things. Ziggy, you've had experience in L.A. when you were on the Sunset Strip. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, we were at 8730 Sunset Boulevard. And when we signed the lease at the time, it was owned by Kenny Rogers. The building, and then he sold it to another gentleman who particularly didn't want any delis in his building. So he made it very difficult. But when we were operating over there, it was a wonderful experience. I think we had every, celebrity of that time hanging out in that place. And we had, I was new because I'm from New York. I didn't know all the ins and outs of Hollywood. So when I would come in there, we would have all of these studio heads that I didn't know who they were or anything else. And I treat everybody the same. It doesn't matter who you are. And they would come in. And I remember this producer guy goes, "Do you know who you have in your dining room?" I said, "I don't know. There's a nice lady over here. She works in the studio." And it was a woman named Shari Lansing. And then he said, and who's that?" And it was a guy named Frank Mancuso. He was running MGM. And then there was Sid Sheinfeld or whatever?
Sheinberg.
Yes, he was eating there, and they would all be eating there for lunch and dinner, and I met all these characters, and they liked it that I didn't make such a big deal about them. I just was curious that they were eating my food and enjoying it and being more of a Hamisha, like the male version of Molly Goldberg, basically.
Well, here's my question, Ziggy, because I'm curious. A man who grows up in New York opens up an L.A. restaurant and ends up taking over the Midwest in Houston. What got you to Houston and why Houston?
Okay, well, it's a very interesting story. Let's start from the beginning. So my family has been in the delicatessen restaurant business since the early 1900s. My grandfather had a very famous deli on Broadway. It was the first delicatessen on Broadway called the Rialto Delicatessen Restaurant. It was right next to the Brill Building. So you had everyone from Broadway would be hanging out in the store. He opened up during the height of the Depression in 1927. And Walter Winchell, who ate there every day and wrote his column there, said it was either going to be a great success or the biggest sideshow Broadway ever saw. Thank God it was a success. And you would have people like, you know, the Marx Brothers would come there to eat, and Joey Adams, if anyone out there still remembers who Joey Adams is. I know you do. He would eat there, and Milton Berle would eat there, and Ethel Merman, and they would all be his people. So my family had that store. They had burgers on 47th Street. We had Gernard's on Madison Avenue. My other uncle went out in the suburbs for 50 years. They had the Woodrow Kosher Delicatessen in Hewlett, Long Island. My other family had in Spring Valley, New York. They had a Crest Hill Kosher Deli for about 50 years. So we've been doing this a very, very long time. Now, when I was in the store in Spring Valley, my brother was going to go to USC Film School, and my brother was very, very wild. So I wanted to keep an eye on him. So I went out to visit him and see what LA was all about. And I went to some of the delicatessen stores, and they were good, but they weren't what I do. And I thought I could keep an eye on him and I could make it myself a nice living. And we were looking for a location, and that's how I ended up on Sunset Boulevard.
Was that now, Nikki Blair's at one time?
We got that from Nikki Blair, and his partner was a gentleman named Bobby Fiddler. And Nikki was a character himself. I mean, he was great. And we got that's, and it was a great space. It was a great space. We had the whole dining room, and then if you went out to the side, we had a whole patio that overlooked the whole of LA. It was really, really a nice space. Unfortunately, like I said, management of the building changed, and we had difficulties with the management.
You know, Ziggy, if I just may interrupt for a moment, Nikki Blair, who everybody knows, Nikki was a guy who was best friends with a young guy in New York. They both came from the Bronx, named Bernie Schwartz. Bernie Schwartz and Nikki Blair decided to go out to Hollywood and become movie stars. Bernie Schwartz became Tony Curtis. And Nikki, of course, I don't know what Nikki's real name was, but it became Nikki Blair. But if you look up Nikki Blair on IMDb, because of his relationship with Curtis, and because he was a very terrific, Nikki was a great guy, he's probably been in more movies than anybody that's ever lived. Bit parts.
He always had bit parts. He had that, and he was also very good friends with Clint Eastwood as well, and knew Clint very well. In fact, that's why I believe they had the Unforgiven before I took over the store and built it out. They had the Unforgiven party after right. the.
Yeah. What years were you on the Strip?
I was on the Strip there from 90 to 96.
So they were all the guys like Red Buttons and Buddy Hackett. They were all probably going in there.
Oh, yeah. We had everybody. I mean, I had everyone. We had, look, we had Annette Bening. What was it? Her husband. What was
Warren Beatty.
Warren Beatty, yeah. We had Dennis Hopper would come up there. We would have all of the old time and new time people, you know, in the store, because we were open 24 hours. Basically, what were the usual suspects was probably written in that store. Majority of it, there was that I think that Entourage show was conceived in the deli.
It was a great place. I was there, of course, but at that time, we didn't really know each other, which came later. But as Julian says, so what takes you from the Sunset Strip to Houston, Texas.
Okay, so it's funny. So when we went through that issue, and I had an arrangement where the landlord and I made a deal because he just didn't want me out, and he was going to cut out my parking. We made an arrangement that we would leave. I had to look for another location. I tried to look for a location on South Beverly Drive. And on South Beverly Drive, you had a Hamburger Hamlet at the time. I think it's now, is it the Beverly Grill or whatever it is?
It definitely isn't Hamburger Hamlet.
So we tried to make the deal. And unfortunately, when we were doing that, they went bankrupt. And if you've ever tried to buy a piece of property out of a bankruptcy, it can take about a year. And then at the end, there are no guarantees that after you went through this whole process to try to get it, the trustee could sell it to somebody else right from underneath you. And I've done that and been through that once before.
But that would have been a great location for you. Oh, boy.
It would have been wonderful.
Yeah.
But we decided to walk away from it. I looked also at another place in the Brentwood area. And again, the same thing. They went bankrupt. And I said, you know, Rooster's Beshert is Beshert. And I said, something divine is telling me I'm not supposed to be here. My brother at that time graduated and was doing very well. So I said, you know what? I don't have to watch him. So I went back to New York. And I was going to look to either acquire an existing operation or start something new. So while I was there and looking around and that, I started a catering company called Gerard and Levy. We did very well with that. And then I was trying to acquire the Celebrity Deli in Times Square. And with a gentleman named Ralph Scotto, and he was a bit of a wise guy, so we ended up not making the deal there, even though I was in that store for about 6 months. And then we were going to do another location in Times Square, and at that time, Rudy Giuliani redid the whole of Times Square. He got rid of all the hookers, he got rid of everything, and he cleaned it up, and the rents went through the roof. So we were trying to get this one space, me and a gentleman named Freddie Klein, who was the old owner of the Carnegie. And Freddie was one of the biggest restaurant brokers in New York. He had a piece of the Stage. He had a piece of Wolf's. He was everything in the deli business.
And so, as big a fan of the New York Knicks as Spike Lee and Woody Allen together.
Absolutely. No doubt. He's famous for that.
Yeah.
And we were going to open up a spot, and we looked at the lease. And it was ridiculous. And I said, you know, after being in business with Svansik Yours, that means 20 years, I said, you know, I don't need people patting me on the back, telling me how great my food is and how this is. I need to make a living. So I said, look, let's go out to dinner. I'll take you out and we'll figure this out. So I said, where do you want to go? He says, let's go to Sparks Steakhouse. So we went to Sparks. And when we were sitting down, we got a phone call from a gentleman called Lenny Friedman. And Lenny Friedman had a son named Kenny.
And a cousin named Arthur.
Yes, right. And Kenny wanted to go in the restaurant business. And Lenny, being a kid from the Bronx, who's a self-made man in the real estate business, said, look, I'll back you, but the only way I'm backing you is it's got to be a delicatessen. So he called my friend up, who was the old owner of the Carnegie, Freddie Klein, and he said, hey, we've done some investigation. There's nobody left in the business. He said, you know, you happen to be in luck. I happen to be sitting across from the last of the Mohegans. That's Ziggy Gruber. He bakes, pickles, smokes his own meat. He does everything. He's fabulous. So he puts me on the phone to Lenny. And even though Lenny's from the Bronx, to me, he had a Southern twang to him. But maybe it's because, you know, I was a very, very, you know, diehard New Yorker. So he said, are there any Jews in Texas? He says, there's tons of Jews here. I said, because I don't cook you know, water it down for anything else. I make it really traditional, really, really, you know, in your face. He says, oh, no, they'd love you and they'd love you. I said, you know, is it a horse town? He goes, no, we're cosmopolitan. We've got, you know, symphony. We've got all kinds of museums. You'd love it down here. He says, look, I'm going to send you a plane. He says, all you have is one weekend to waste of your whole life. He goes, maybe it could be one of the biggest things that ever happened to you. I said, okay. The one thing about Lenny, and Arthur can attest to this, he can sell ice to Eskimos. There's no doubt about it. So we took him up on it. He sent the plane, and it took me all the way to Houston in June. And I'll never forget when I walked off the plane. It was like a wall of heat that hit me. It felt like you were in a tumble dryer. And I met his son, Kenny, and I said, I don't know if I can deal with this heat. He says, oh, it's never usually this hot, which was a lot.
what year was that, Ziggy?
That was in 1999. And he said, it's unusually hot. So I said, okay. So the next couple of days, he took me around Houston. And we took a look at all of what was there. There was nothing here. There was no appetizing store, no delicatessen store. There was a thing that called themselves a delicatessen called Guggenheim's. It wasn't very good at all. It wouldn't have lasted 2 seconds in New York or Los Angeles. And I saw that there were very big synagogues here. And I saw there was a big Jewish infrastructure. And I said, you know, there's an opportunity here. So I looked at him. He showed me the location that he wanted me to go in. I didn't know from Houston. I said, is this a good location? He said, yes, it's the center of Maine and Maine. I said, okay, I take your word for it. We shook hands. We've been partners now for 25 years, and the rest is history. And it's been a wonderful experience.
Yes, I want to just say something before the guys get in. What this restaurant is very, it's familial because of Ziggy. He is the key, obviously, to the whole thing. It's the best food and all. Ziggy Gruber is to the deli business what Tom Cruise is to movies and what Tiger Woods is to golf. I say this not to give you a kiss and a hug. I just tell the truth. Best food. As good a restaurant, period, as I've ever been in. But he's basically blended Lindy's, old Lindy's in New York, with the Carnegie Delicatessen. That's what I feel it to be. Ziggy, you've been involved with lots of celebrities. We are Hollywood Land. We want to hear about your interactions with different comedians, the different guys. I know they all come into Kenny and Ziggy's.
Well, in Kenny and Ziggy's, whenever somebody comes from out of town, if they're doing something on the circuit, we get a lot of Broadway shows here. Believe it or not, a lot of Broadway shows start here and then they end up on Broadway. They try to work them out over here. So it's very cosmopolitan, Houston. It's a great city. So we've had all kinds of people. John Leguizamo has been in a few times. I mean, it's been wonderful. You know, all kinds of comedians when they were here, if they do a thing at the Improv, we have a local Improv they do when they come in. We get a lot of political people here on both sides. It's been very interesting. We had about a year ago, we had, the second husband or whatever you call him. He was here, and we get also, all different, senators in here. And
didn't you have George Bush in there at one time?
Yes, we had George and Barbara when the old man was still alive. Yeah.
Who lived in that area.
Yes, he did. So we had, you know, lots of people. I mean, look, like I said, Richard Lewis, when he comes into town, I know Richard for years. I know him since the Sunset Strip. So, he, when he comes into town, you know, in like in the old store in Hollywood. I mean, we had, like I said, everybody. I mean, it used to be funny. You talk about comedians, you know, you would have all the time. Norm Crosby would always hang out with Jack Carter, and they always loved to argue. It was the funniest thing. They would, and it would be hilarious. And then you'd have Jan Murray would come in. Then, you know, like I said, Buddy would come in. And my dad knew Buddy Hackett because they were both from Borough Park, and they used to hang out on the same street corner. My dad's best friend and Buddy Hackett were very close, a gentleman named Davey Adler. And they were good. And they also knew David Duchovny's father was a writer, and they knew him since he was a kid too. You know, he did a lot of comedy stuff.
The hangouts for those guys in Hollywood in LA were the Fry's Club on Little Santa Monica, the Cafe Roma in Beverly Hills, and your place. Now you're a third generation deli man. Let's talk about for a second the documentary movie they made about you from 2014, which was great. It was called Deli Man. Steve, you know about it?
No, I've only learned about it from you. I am interested to know how that came together.
Fun movie for everybody. Julian, had you ever seen it?
I have not. No, I've seen clips of Ziggy, though, and yes. I'm still salivating.
All right.
That it was very funny. There was a great documentarian filmmaker named Eric Greenberg Anjou, and he just finished doing a movie called The Cantor's Tale. And when he came to Houston, he came and ate in my place, and we were talking, and he was asking me a lot of questions. And I was telling him, you know, there's not too many delicatessens left, and telling him a whole bunch of, you know, stories and stuff like that. And I didn't think much of it. He was just another customer. And then about 6 to 8 months later, he called up and he said, let me ask you a question. He said, yeah. Said, do you think you could introduce me to other deli owners and stuff like that? I'm thinking of doing a documentary on. And I said, sure. And you know, I gave him a list of all these delicatessen people around the country. You know, I gave him, you name it, New York, Chicago, whatever. And he went and followed all these deli owners, including myself, around for about, you know, a year and a bit. And what was great is when he invited me to show the cutting of it, I didn't realize we were going to be such a center of the universe of that documentary. And I said, why? He said, well, you're the most interesting guy we met out of all these other people. And he said, and you're a bit of a character, and you're fun. So we thought it would be good for you to tie it all in together. And he did an unbelievable job. He did an unbelievable job. And it was also in the running for an Academy Award. He did such a great job.
We played it in our theater in Tamarack, and we broke our house record. They loved it. Anybody who sees this movie falls in love with it for any number of reasons. Fast question, Ziggy. In a business that's losing delicatessens all over the United States, why are you thriving so much in Houston, Texas?
Well, I do work at it. I mean, I'm here 6 to 7 days a week, and I always try to think out of the box, and I try not to be complacent, and I try to see what the trends are. You know, if the delis that stayed with not being creative with how they presented things or how they did things have kind of gone to the wayside. What is interesting about my menu or what we do is every single thing I do on my menu is a Jewish related item. Some delicatessens, you know, they put burritos on and they put Italian stuff and all kinds. I don't do that. Everything I have has a Jewish slant to it. Everything. So if it's even if it's something new, we add enough Jewish elements to it to give it a little bit of something interesting. So I think we stay very relevant. Sorry, with the younger people today, because look, let's be honest with you. The younger people are not eating a piece of kishka, and they're probably not eating, you know, gribbenis and schmaltz.
What are they eating?
Well, that's the one thing, you know, I trained my people here. They will eat goulash and they like it, and they will eat, you know, a stuffed veal chop, you know, that's done in a good way. And they'll eat my braised lamb shanks, or they'll eat, you know, different kinds of fish. We do a Moroccan style Shabbos fish that people like in a spicy type of sauce. It's almost like a piece of fish in shakshuka. It's almost like that. So we do this, but as opposed to me just bringing in just strictly Ashkenazic stuff, I've over the years have added a little bit of the Sephardic stuff because a lot of the younger people like to eat that.
Do the younger people eat hot pastrami sandwiches and hot corned beef sandwiches and hot dogs?
Everybody eats hot corned beef and pastrami. And what's interesting is my people that come in here are not just Jewish. We have all walks of life, all ethnicities. And they love pastrami, and they love for me, and they love smoked fish. We sell more smoked fish than any other place in the whole Southwest. We are, you know, besides being a delicatessen, I'm also one part, you know, Russ and Daughters or a Barney Greengrass because I sell that much fish like that. So we sell a ton of fish. And the way my boys cut it, you can see an eclipse through it.
Julian, what was the name of your delicatessen in Kingsbridge Road?
Oh, the Towers Deli. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you'd know that one, Ziggy. That was in the Bronx, and that was probably the best one that I ever ate in. But I've never been to your place, and I'm definitely booking a flight very soon. What I want to ask you was, I don't think I've known too many deli people who studied at the Cordon Bleu. I don't think too many have done that. Now, you did that in London, and right. Have you used any of those, what you learned there in Houston?
Well, you know, it's funny. When my grandfather passed away, I took it very bad because my grandfather was like my best friend. And I, at that point, I knew I wasn't going to be, a rocket scientist or a lawyer or anything else like that. I knew what I wanted to do. So I was going to go with a cousin of mine, and we were going to open up our own small little store and see where it went. Well, like any good parent, education, education, education. My mother told me, she's like, look, we're going to go and take you to England. You're going to visit your cousin. You never met him before. And it'll take your mind off a thing. And then we'll figure out what we're going to do with you. Okay. So I went with my mom. We went to England and I met a cousin. And the cousin informed me, because I was 15 at the time, that he was going to the Cordon Bleu. And I'm like, well, if you're going, well, then I'm going too. And I decided to stay and go to that, that fine institution. Now, I had to talk my way into it because it was summertime, and I went in there and I saw the gentleman that was the dean there. And I said, listen, I'd like to join, you know, your college here. And he said, well, look, do you have a high school diploma? I said, no. He says, do you have any A levels or O levels, which is the equivalent? So I said, no. I said, let me ask you a question. He said, what? I said, do you have a discretionary fund that I can make a donation to? He said, yeah. So we came to a meeting of the minds, and I got into
it. have you used that experience in Houston, New York, or L.A.? Have you applied anything that you learned there?
Absolutely. I've implied a lot. You know, it's funny. My dad didn't want me in the delicatessen business. He thought being in a fancier business, it was more like a gentleman's business. The reality is, it doesn't matter if you're in the delicatessen business or if you're in a fancy restaurant. It's hard work and it's not glamorous. That it isn't. When I went and graduated, I gave it a shot to go and work in London. I worked in a couple of 3-star Michelin restaurants. I worked at a place called the Le Gavroche and the Waterside Inn. And Le Gavroche at the time, when I was there, was a bunch of pishes. And it was me, Gordon Ramsay, Marco Pierre White, you know, and there was Pierre Kaufman and a host of others. Now, all these people weren't big at that time, but the Roux brothers definitely did a revolution, a culinary revolution in Britain, which is felt to this day. I mean, most of these great chefs that you see there today were all from the Le Gavroche school, if you want to say. But I decided, I'll never forget, I was cooking. We were cooking food one night, and my dad sent me a bunch of stuff, and I all of a sudden invited everybody after work. I was cooking everyone, you know, blintzes and giving them corned beef and pastrami and this and that, and they were going nuts for the food. I never felt that warmth in that world. That's not my world. I'm in a modern day Isaac Bashevis singer world. that I like dealing with my Insula Mansion people.
But I want to just say again that's the key. I think other than the total greatness of the food and you, the key is that when you go into Kenny and Ziggy's, you feel the warmth of family. And that is a significant thing. There's a comfort zone. People are happy. They're laughing. He's got pictures, Julian, Steve, and Mike, all over the walls of movie, great movie posters, great Broadway posters. He's got Hollywood Land in Houston, Texas. Kenny and Ziggy's is a place to go.
What you're also talking about is energy. When I walk into a restaurant, and I can feel the energy of the restaurant. I am not a white tablecloth guy of a quiet restaurant. I get immediately bored. And I think that presentation is a big deal. The thing I wanted to ask you, Ziggy, is if I'm an actor and I'm shooting on location somewhere, I always thought a sign of a good restaurant was if I'm ordering, whether it's Chazen's chili or Nate and Al's potato salad, to come. Do you get orders from people out of the city for your food?
I ship all across the country. I can't tell you how many people in Los Angeles I sell to on a daily basis. I can't tell you how many Yuntifs I've catered via Gold Belly and stuff to send to New York or Miami or even, like I said, Los Angeles. You know, we have a very good reputation and people know our food. But once you've had our food, you never go back because it's a taste. You know, one of the best reviews I ever had was in Los Angeles, so one of the newspapers. And I'll never forget, the critic wrote, "Unless you're over 80, you've never eaten food like this." That was the best compliment. I love that compliment that I've ever had.
Because you are a throwback. You are one of you're a unicorn. And it's just one of those things. My cousin lucked out and you lucked out with Lenny, of course. And that marriage has been fantastic. Kenny and Ziggy's, guys, you should Google Kenny and Ziggy's. Everybody who's listening should Google this place. It's more than a restaurant. It's a way of life.
Well, all I can tell you is that I saw We Schlep Anywhere. I like that particular line. Not only We Schlep Anywhere, but I have not read a menu that big since I started reading War and Peace. I mean, that is one serious takeout menu.
Well, here's a question I got to ask. Cantor's Deli for many years in L.A. would name sandwiches after famous people. Do you have anybody on your menu who you've licensed a name?
Well, this is what I do. If I do puns and funny things, like, for example, we got Fiddler on the Roof of Your Mouth, you know, we've got, you know, Give Me Liberty or Give Me Schmaltz, you know. I mean, we do stuff like that. And the reason why I did that, and I started that in Los Angeles, is because, you know, and I know, because you were all in the entertainment business, everybody thinks they're an A-list celebrity in their own mind. So, God forbid, don't have my name on your menu. You know, it makes them this way. No one could ever do it. And you know who did that too? The Carnegie did that too. They never put names on that because they didn't want to shun anybody. And I don't do that.
I wanted to ask you one thing, Ziggy. I knew Leo Steiner. I thought he owned the Carnegie. Did he not?
There were four partners in the Carnegie. Leo, who I loved. Milton, who was really a candy store guy, but he got in there because Bill Landsman, he was married to Bill Landsman's niece. So Bill Landsman and Freddie Klein, they were the silent partners that put up the cash for the other two.
Okay, that clears it up for me.
Ziggy, in their heyday, what was the Carnegie grossing a week, roughly?
Well, when Leo had it, remember, the Carnegie's been around a long time. The Carnegie was a non-entity when you know, Jaime and Max Asnes.
Stage, yeah.
Stage. I mean, let me tell you, you know, Max Asnes was a movie star. I mean, let's be honest, he's a character. I'm still friends with his Jaime's son today. He just turned his second grandchild he just had. But what was it? Yeah, nobody, you know, when Herbie Udis had I think it was Norman, they had the Carnegie before Leo. Leo is the one that made the Carnegie the Carnegie. It wasn't anyone else. It was Leo. Leo had the food. Leo had the recipes. And on top of it, Leo was the one that invented and started coming up with those crazy size sandwiches.
And we should mention that Broadway Danny Rose, Woody Allen's great movie, was shot a lot in that restaurant. So those of you who don't know the Carnegie but know the movie, that's where we're talking. That's the deli we're talking about.
So I consider, to me, the weather vane of a good deli is the matzo ball soup. If the matzo ball soup sucks, I'm not coming back. Tell us how matzo ball soup has changed from Max's time to your time.
I don't think it's changed. I mean, a good matzo ball soup is good. Basically, the golden yolk, which is the broth, has got to be very rich and tasteful and that. Unfortunately, if you go into a lot of places, it either tastes like dishwater, you know that, or it's got like just, they use base and it looks like this fluorescent yellow, which like you're drinking Soylent Green. But you know, a good soup is a good soup. Now, I make the soup. I use a ton of vegetables. I put a lot of onions, leeks, carrots, dill, parsley. I use parsnips. I mean, I use a lot of stuff. I use over 100 pounds of bones in one making of the soup, and then a lot of chicken, too. And then on top of it, this is the secret that I do that the other ones don't do. I use the feetskillig. The feetskillig are the chicken feet. They give a flavor like you wouldn't believe, and they give a real richness. So that's why MD Anderson and the medical center, which is one of the largest in the world, they send all their patients to me because, let me tell you, before we knew when it was trendy to say bone broth, we were making bone broth a long time.
But Ziggy, what's happened to the delis? Why are the delis starting to go out of business, or have been for a while? What's the reason, do you think, or reasons?
It's economic factors. Number one, the rents are ridiculous today, even for a regular restaurant or any kind of establishment. The rents are ridiculous. The labor costs are through the roof, beyond. the deli has more labor than a regular restaurant. And it's also very skilled labor. You can't just bring someone in and say, okay, work the counter. It takes an apprenticeship. So you're dealing with those two factors. And the biggest factor is the food cost. So the food costs, especially now, are so ridiculous. Stuff that was peasant food has become luxury. You know, corned beef and pastrami was not an expensive thing, but because of the cuts of meat, because of everything else, they become very expensive. Smoked fish, white fish, Nova, was not very expensive years ago, but now it's uber expensive. And that goes for everything else. So if you put all of those factors together, it erodes the bottom line in such a way that it's very hard to make a living.
So, Ziggy, how many people do you employ at Kenny and Ziggy's?
I employ 150 people.
Oh, that's wow. A lot of people. Yeah.
Whoa.
Guys, oh. I'm telling you, it's the greatest delicatessen restaurant, in my opinion. I would rate Kenny and Ziggy's as a restaurant with virtually anything I've been to. I mean, you
can
rate anything.
I have a question. Excuse me, Zig, I have a question. Sure. When I walk into a place like Nate and Al's, they have a deli counter where you can order food to take out. Obviously, they have a dining room. You can eat there. What percentage, how does the percentage break down between the number of people who come in just to order takeout and the people who sit in your restaurant and have a meal? Is it pretty even?
I would say mine works. I would say we probably do takeout business, you know, I want to say about 45 to 48% of my business is takeout, and the rest is in the house.
Got it.
And but how many people do you sit in that restaurant? It's a big restaurant.
Yes.
What do you seat there, Zig?
I have over 300 seats.
300 seats.
So you said you're open 24 hours a day, which...
Oh, in Los Angeles, I was. Oh. And believe me, I learned a lesson back then. I said, you know what? I was like that. I probably was the inspiration of those walking zombie movies because when these people wouldn't show up, forget about it. Who's working that position? It would be me. So I vowed that I was not going to do that. I close here at 9 o'clock at night.
What time do you go in the morning?
I go in the morning here. I used to go in the morning around 5:36, but now I'm also an Uber driver to my kids, taking everybody to school. So by the time I'm finished with that, I'm usually about 7:30.
How are Izzy and Max, your children?
My Izzy and Max are doing great.
That's great.
I wanted to ask you, Ziggy, I always wondered about this. I'm sure in restaurants there's food that at the end you can't sell, only because maybe someone bought too much or there was a snowstorm or whatever. Are you able to do something with that food, give it to the poor or something like that?
We work with some organizations that we do, but I got to tell you, the way we run things so well over here, and it's a testament to my management. And you got to remember, out of those 150, about 90% of those people have worked for me for over 20 years. Mm. So a lot of people here that know what they're doing. So we really have very little waste here.
Wow. That's really impressive because that's one of the problems some restaurants have, as we know.
Well, I mean, look at Nate and Al's. Okay. So Nate and Al's, when Al was running it with his wife, okay, you know, he had those people that were, he had fantastic counter guys. He had all the old timers. They knew how to cut fish. They knew how to, they sold a lot of fish and a lot of delicatessen stuff. They were really, really good people. And then you had Kay, the waitress over there that was there for years, and some of the other girls, they were there for years. Now they're all gone. They're all in the Behinga Yor in the other world. So, you know, they're not there anymore. And this generation today is a much different generation. To be honest with you, it's a very superficial generation. They're very mercenary. Mm. You know, that's why when someone older comes and applies for a job for me, and if they're pretty good, you know, with it, I hire them right away because they're better to deal with, you know, than some of these new kids today.
Well, you're a throwback. Guys, I want to ask you a question. My partners, Julian, Steve, and Mike. So if you went to Kenny and Ziggy's tomorrow, what would be your favorite thing to order in a deli? What would be your favorite dish, Julian?
Well, I haven't had pastrami in so many years that I'd have to have pastrami, especially if it was from Ziggy. But I've got to tell you, Ziggy, I asked my wife for a huge lunch today because I knew that we were going to be talking food and I just needed all the help I could get. But yes, it would be pastrami. I'd throw the coleslaw, the mustard on the rye bread, and I would just sit there. At the Carnegie, Ziggy, they knew me as the guy who would come in and say, I'll take a pastrami on rye and three pieces of rye bread on the side. Because I couldn't put my mouth around that food.
You know, what about you, Steve?
Okay, I'd start with the soup. I would sample the matzo ball soup, of course. And then in my latter days, I've become a big fruit guy. So I like a big fruit salad of mixed fruit if you have it with some cottage cheese on top. Right. And and then, of course, I'm a bit of a connoisseur of coleslaw and potato salad. There's 90 different ways to make coleslaw and potato salad. And I'd sample that as well.
Wait just a second. You're going to go to Ziggy's and order a bunch of fruit?
He'd get it though.
I say that's outrageous.
No, I got even more outrageous. Your other partner over there, this is what he orders. He will order probably a half a pound of pastrami, but you should only put it on steamed broccoli.
Not steamed. El Dante. El Dante.
All right.
What about Mike? Mike, what Michael. Would you order? Let's
what
see
would I
Mike.
Order. I would definitely start possibly with some pickles and then go to some matzo ball soup. Matzo ball soup for me is a gateway to see how good the deli is and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, probably would do either a corned beef and probably corned beef with mustard and rye and possibly some chopped liver on it, add to it, you know. And then if you guys had the potato, like the potato wedges or the steak fries, that also is a good sign.
Ziggy, would you believe Mike mentioned to us earlier, Mike comes from Atlanta, that there's no delis in Atlanta. Is that possible?
Now, all you got is Goldberg's, which is a bagel store there. And I think you have a place called Groovy's. That's near the Med Center over there, and I think that's it, right?
Yeah, we have a place also. It's called the General Muir. It's supposed to.
Oh, yeah. You know Todd?
Yeah.
The guy that owns it. He's partnered up with these people that opened up next to me. They're really nice people. They opened up a Persian restaurant called Rumi.
Oh, and you know Rumi's very well.
Yeah. And he opened up, and he's like their corporate chef or whatever it is, because they have a bunch of them now. But I asked him, but it seems like, again, you talk about, and I didn't come, I didn't have to ask him, but I asked him, you know, you're not doing too much with the deli stuff. It's because the bottom line, people don't realize the bottom line is just so narrow these days when you add all those factors.
But you see, Ziggy knows the history of delis like we know the history of movies. And one thing before I talk about movies, Ziggy, I want to talk to you about that, is I've got a sweet tooth. They've got the greatest bakery I've ever been to. Mm-hmm. They make desserts that are ginormous.
Right. You've got to get a good babka. You got to get a good black and white cookie.
Oh, the best.
We got all the butter cookies. We got, you know, seven layer cake. We got all kinds of Danish. We got strawberry shortcake, New York blackout cake. We've got cream pies. We've got pecan pies, key lime pies. You know, I mean, there isn't a cake you name. We have all kinds of cheese. Our cheesecake is legendary. What was it? We have different. We have a tort, which is half mousse, half cheesecake. We have an Oh My God cheesecake. We just started doing a Cafe Cubano cheesecake. Where
this this conversation is getting us all hard. This is great.
So how many bar mitzvahs are you catering this weekend?
Actually, we're catering two events. This one, we're doing one at Beth Israel, and we're doing another one at Beth Sinai.
Good, good.
I want to ask a question here. Ziggy, you were also a film critic for one of the local TV stations.
That's true.
You're a movie guy. If you had to make a list of 10 of your favorite movies, what would some of them be?
Well, I mean, listen, you know, I love The Godfather. I've seen it probably over 300 times. Once Upon a Time in America.
Which, by the way, has a great deli.
Yeah.
You know, how about When Harry Met Sally, Zig? When Harry Met Sally. Hello.
I loved Harry Met Sally. I also loved, On the Waterfront, even though, you know, that's when Brando was Brando. Yeah. You know,
In Harry Met Sally, how much business was it appreciated for Katz's Delicatessen because of that scene?
That movie, and it still perpetuates. I mean, I can't tell you how many times that was the gift that keeps on giving. But yeah. Let's be honest. Rob Reiner's mother had probably one of the single greatest lines.
Yeah, iconic.
There's it was unbelievable.
It's the only line she's ever uttered on film in her life. That was it.
Iconic, yeah.
I wanted to ask you, Ziggy, there's a movie that my compatriots probably will not know, but you may know, called La Grande Bouffe. Have you ever heard of that film?
No.
All right. It is the great, in translation, the great buffet, whatever. You've got to see that movie, because that movie is one of the most extraordinary movies, all about a restaurant, all about food, and all about how it all comes together. It's a French film, La Grande Bouffe.
I'm writing that down. I'm gonna definitely.
So, Ziggy, let me ask you a quick question. What do you like to eat for breakfast? What is a typical Ziggy meal?
Okay, so if I come in the morning, I'll tell you pre before the doctors were giving me a hard time, and now okay. I would probably eat a bagel with cream cheese and Nova. Probably a lot most of the time. I eat a lot of baked salmon salad, white fish salad. I like eggs, eggs over medium or poached. I like it with some home fries, I like a Leo. We do a Miami style French toast, like as an homage, like the old Rascal House used to make it, nice and thick and soaking there, delicious. So I mean, things like that for breakfast. Yeah, I would do that, and I have a nice coffee with it usually.
And when you have lunch, what is your drink of choice for a lunch?
For a drink of choice, I probably would be a celery tonic.
I'm sure Dr. Brown's.
Of course, they're the only ones that make celery tonic. I like that. And we make our own hot dogs, so our hot dogs are great. Mm. We're not worse than, a sandwich, of course. And our blintzes are phenomenal, if you like blintzes.
And I bet your knishes are great.
Oh, our knishes are wonderful. We make all our own knishes here. The only knish we don't make, which we still bring in, is the square knish, which is from Coney Island. We do the
biggest. You know that if we ever did this show, like Larry King years ago used to do a show in Miami from, I think, the Rascal House, if I'm not mistaken. Or was it Wolfie's?
Wolfie's. Yeah.
Guys, if we ever did a show from a deli, our show would be incredible sitting in a booth at Kenny and Ziggy's. would a lot go, whatever it may be, you know.
I have a feeling though Mike would complain it's too noisy.
Never. As long as we get us to a deli, I'd be thrilled. So it's okay.
Ziggy, what do you sell? What do you sell more of, pastrami or corned beef sandwiches?
I sell more corned beef than pastrami, and I'll tell you why. Because, and this is the way it works. I sell about 7,000 pounds of pastrami a week.
That's almost four tons.
Yeah, three and a half.
And I sell about, you know, 8,000 to 9,000 pounds because we sell a lot of Reubens. You know, the non-Jews love the Reubens.
Mm. I have to tell you a quick non-Jews Jewish story. Remember Kaplan's in Monticello? Did you ever hear that?
Do I know? Yeah, I know it very well. We had a lot of property in Monticello.
Oh, yeah. So Mo and Ann, I knew Mo and Ann well, and I took a non-Jewish friend in to eat, and he ordered a nish. What are you talking about? What are you, an idiot? What do you mean nish? It's a knish. He said, well, you don't say knife.
You know, I'll tell you something. I love the sign of Kaplan's.
Kaplan's had the
best contestant sign. No, there's only been two great signs. Kaplan's and the sign over at the Rascal House, the old sign, was amazing. But Kaplan's, forget about it. I loved that thing. And, you know, growing up as a kid, we would go up to the Catskills when it was kind of on its way down at that point, but it was still thriving. And they were doing well. And then you had Stolman's across the street. That was, they did appetizing and they did all kinds of stuff like that. And you know that you had, the Katz's Bakery was the best.
Yeah, I remember all. I spent a lot of years there, but Kaplan's was my home. But I'm lucky that I don't live in Houston because I would be waddling home at night.
Julian, you would get addicted so fast. I mean, for three meals a day. It wouldn't be just for a lunch.
Here's a typical question from an L.A. person. Sure. How's the parking in Houston?
Easy.
Not hard.
How many spaces? Lot. How many spaces do you have?
Oh, I got a whole field. Hundreds.
Okay. Oh, good.
Before we sign off, Steve, who is your guest this week? Who's on your show?
My guest this week is Craig Edwards, who is one of the world's leading authorities on the Bowery Boys and the Dead End Kids. We're going to be talking Slip Mahoney and Satch. Satch, it's going to be a Bowery Boys feast.
Hard to say, Bowery Boys.
And your show, Julian, is?
Oh, this week I have Marlo Thomas. We'll be talking about how...
That girl.
Yeah, that girl herself talking about many things, including how St. Jude's really began. Ziggy, I have to tell you, it's been such a pleasure listening, and I can't tell you how much I would love to... If I come to Houston, there's no way. I only was there once to interview the president, President George H.W. Bush. And here's the interesting thing. He duplicated the White House in his office. The Oval Office was duplicated in Houston. It was amazing. I couldn't believe when I walked in.
They were very nice people. I got to tell you, they were his wife, Barbara, the most down-to-earth person you ever want to meet. I'll never forget. I was making a deposit and she came behind with all the Secret Service thing. And I said, oh, First Lady, go in front. She said, no, I wait in line like everybody else. She was Hamish.
I always say that if anybody wants to look up the Yiddish glossary under the word Hamish, they'd see your picture. Absolutely.
So everybody, we've had a delightful time with Ziggy today, and to our listeners, as you know, we're on all the podcast platforms. We now have a YouTube channel. If you type in Tales from Hollywoodland on YouTube, you're going to come right to see us. We have a great following. If you'd like to I ask this every week, if you'd like to join us possibly as a co-host, if you have a certain part of show business you want to check into, we're into it. And we'd love to have you as a potential guest. And if you have questions or suggestions, we love to take them. And by the way, if you're in Houston, you got to go to Ziggy's Deli. And what is the formal name of the deli? It's
Kenny and Ziggy's New York Delicatessen Restaurant.
And what's the address?
It's 1743 Post Oak Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77056.
And if we want to get some takeout, what's your email?
Oh, the email? Our email, the website is www.kennyandziggys.com. And if you want our food in your places and you're not in Houston, you could go to goldbelly.com and you can buy anything you want, and we'll schlep it to you via Goldbelly.
Well, that's wonderful.
You guys should do that. And also, for our listeners and everybody, look at Deli Man, which is a great documentary that features Ziggy. And Ziggy, I want you to give my love and kisses to Lenny and to all family. And we loved having you. We should have you back again. Okay.
Yeah, no, I'd love to. I enjoyed myself thoroughly, and it was nice, very nice. And if you do Gold Belly, Arthur, don't worry, I will throw some broccoli in as well.
Oh, with the broccoli. Egg salad, bacon, egg salad, bacon, tomatoes, and raw broccoli. There you go. That's the antidote. That's great. Be good, Zig. Love to everybody.
Be well.
Bye, everybody.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Tony.
Do you like ads about podcasts?
You know it.
How about ads about Doctor Who podcasts?
Even better.
Well, you're in luck, because this is an ad about a Doctor Who podcast.
Wow, I love it.
And you'll love us, the Watchathon of Rassilon, a podcast about Doctor Who.
I'll buy 12.
Actually, it's free.
I'll buy 13, then.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.